Good day, my friends, and thank you for listening to the Sean Vieg Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Vieg. You can always learn more about me by visiting SeanViegFitness.com, download my free fitness app, subscribe to my YouTube channel, and browse my library of fitness books. Today's guest on the podcast is Gwen Lawrence. Let me tell you a little bit about Gwen. Gwen has been the team yoga coach for a number of professional sports teams, including the New York Giants, New York Knicks, New York Yankees, NYCFC, New York Red Bulls, and New York Rangers. She is also an adjunct professor at Manhattanville College. She has been in the fitness industry for over 20 years and is an entrepreneur, business owner, massage therapist, yoga school owner, curriculum writer, speaker, yoga coach, author, and video producer. She earned her Bachelor of Science degree in art and dance, and she is a licensed massage therapist, registered yoga teacher, and registered yoga therapist. She is a member of the Yoga Teachers Association and Yoga Alliance. Gwen has been influential in gaining acceptance of yoga as an integral part of athlete training in the world of professional sports. She developed the Power Yoga for Sports program over a decade ago, and it was named Best Sports Medicine Innovation by ESPN Magazine. Another project close to her heart is her commitment to working with military veterans and helping them cope with PTSD and ease re-entry into civilian life. And one more thing, she makes regular appearances on NBC's Today Show, The Dr. Oz Show, Good Day New York, and many TV news and national radio shows. And she is co-host of her own show, The Better Man Show. And I definitely want to ask you some questions about that. So an amazing resume. That was about one-fifth of what I have for you, Gwen. But it's interesting when you hear it all listed out like that. But it's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Same. Thank you so much. This has been a long time coming to be friends with you.
I know. I always think back. I was thinking back yesterday when I was writing out the notes for this podcast. I was trying to think when the moment was we first connected, because we had seen each other for years around. And this is online and in videos and books.
Yep.
And it's one of those social media relationships that we finally bring to fruition here on the podcast. We can actually talk to each other.
Yeah, I can't remember a moment either, but I do want to share a funny story with you that one of my producers for the Better Man Show, we were, you know, just tossing around ideas and showing him some stuff. And he goes, you know, well, I like Sean Vieg. And I was like, no, he's my competitor. You can't like him. What the heck are you doing giving him views? Stop it. And he goes, but he's so funny. I go, I know. And he's so good. And then not long after that, you connected with me. And I was like, we're meant to be friends here. We're definitely meant to collaborate and have some good, great stuff going on.
Oh, absolutely. There's way too much passion and craziness, I think, between us not to want to enhance what we do and work together.
Because
you had popped up on YouTube, one of your videos, I think it was for a frozen shoulder. I'm like, oh, that's really good. Then I looked at the name, like, Gwen Lawrence, I know her, I've talked to her. You have to go back in your mind and think, did I comment on something she did before? What have we done together? So I think the podcast is a great way where we can actually exchange some ideas. And also, you and I had talked about doing a video collaboration.
Yes, definitely.
We have to do that. I'm sitting at my dining room table and it's about 15 degrees outside. So I haven't been able to film outside in a little while, but hopefully soon we can plan that, maybe over the Christmas break.
Sounds good.
Because that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. All right. So what I'd like to do with you is go back, because you have a long history of working in, well, yoga and fitness and working with athletes and military veterans. Like to go back, how did it start for you? When did you first get into, quote, fitness? Was it in high school?
I've always been very interested in fitness. And yeah, I started lifting in high school. I'll give you an exclusive that I don't tell anybody. But
all right, alert the news.
Yeah. When I was in college, and lucky for me, this is pre-internet, so I've searched, and many of my people have searched in order to make fun of me, but I entered Miss Fitness America, and I placed fourth, to my dismay. I mean, good, but not so great. And then I didn't tell any of my, even my roommates, none of my college friends. I just trained. I did it on my own. And I was in my college bar one night and I look up and ESPN is televising it. And there it was. And not only that, they highlighted me. My name was gigantic. And I started entertaining the entire bar so that no one would be looking at the TV. But my passion has gone all the way back to high school. I met my husband when I was 15 in a gym. And, you know, I was a dancer since 3. So it just all goes hand in hand. And it just constantly in there.
Okay. And for us of us who don't know, including me, what is Miss Fitness America?
Well, I don't even know if it exists anymore, but it was more body sculpting and talent and a little bit of brains mixed in with an interview. So it was sort of Miss America of old, only there was a fitness aspect to it and your talent had to be fitness related. So obviously mine was as a dancer.
Okay, that's right. I was reading the bio too. You started as a dancer initially, correct?
Correct, since 3.
Since 3.
Yeah.
Okay, and you said you met your husband at 15.
Yes.
He's a baseball player.
Yeah, he was a baseball player. Now he's a PE teacher, coach, and owns his own baseball facility and baseball organization.
Mm-hmm.
Youth baseball organization. So, yeah.
Okay, so talk about high school. I guess I'd like to get right into yoga because you've dedicated over 20 years, it sounds like, of your life to teaching yoga to all different fitness levels and disciplines. Where did you first get acquainted with yoga? When did that pop into your life?
So this is an interesting story. As soon as I graduated college, I went right into massage therapy school to work more in the medical side of it. So I would work in conjunction with doctors, PTs, and chiropractors. And at the same time, while I was going back to school for that, it was a pretty intensive 2-year program. I was a trainer. So the luck of my life, I was training and traveling on location with Glenn Close. And the first person after I graduated massage therapy school, the school called me with a referral program that the school had, and they said they wanted to refer me to a client. And I said, great. And the client was David Letterman.
David Letterman.
That was my first massage client. And
your absolute first one ever.
Ever.
Mm.
Yes. Is that the most bizarre? And I tell people now, and people are like, who's David Letterman? And I just think, oh,
I know he's been off the air a few years now. Now, if you said Conan O'Brien, yeah.
Right. Yeah, they would know. But you know David Letterman, so you can
appreciate it. The absolute first client was David Letterman.
Yep.
For massage. And, so what was going through your mind for the first massage and having somebody famous like that?
I don't know. I kind of wasn't fazed. And it ended up being every day for 4 years, 10:30 at night, no matter if there was a snowstorm or a holiday, it didn't matter. But I was there to fix him after his taping. And in conjunction with that, I was training Glenn Close nutritional consulting with her and training her to get in shape for her movies. And it was interesting. One day she said, and I was massaging her as well. And one day she said, you know, if I send you to California to learn yoga, would you be my yoga teacher too? And I said, sure.
Really?
Because way back then as a dancer, dancers and yoga were very different ends of the spectrum. Now they're just beautiful, harmonizing, you know, they make sense together. But then it was very different philosophies. But I was open to anything. And she sent me to California for an 8-day intensive. That was my first 200-hour training. And that's how I got into yoga.
So it's by way of fatal attraction and Glenn Close.
Yeah.
She sent you give us a time frame. What year was this around?
You know, I often try to think of that, but I'm thinking that it was around 1990.
Okay. Yeah. What was the yoga world like back then?
The yoga world was
in the States.
Very exclusive kind of world, I found. you know, it really wasn't open to interpretation or opinions. It was Iyengar's way or the highway. It was, this is the way, you know, whatever philosophy he chose to follow. And I really trained in as many disciplines as I possibly could. And none of them ever 100% clicked with me, which is not surprising to anybody that has ever gone to the restaurant with me, because I'll always go, I have a question. Can we make a change?
It's like when Harry met Sally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always want to change it. I want this on the side. I want that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what I did was I just picked and chose everything that rang true or completely made sense to me. I'm a question asker, and I everything really has to be backed by philosophy and make perfect sense to me. So it really was a journey. And being that I had the training, I was massaging, I was doing the yoga, and obviously fully entrenched in my husband's journey, having played professional baseball, you can see, if you look in hindsight, that this was the perfect storm to start creating Power Yoga for Sports.
Okay. You
know, it was many facets and a lot of turbulence and experience that brought me there.
And you left Mr. Letterman back in New York.
Yeah.
So you got,
he actually left me. His old massage therapist came back, and then I went, I got thrown into the wayside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we do move around quite a bit in this business.
Yeah.
And so did you relocate to Southern California then?
No, I never left New York.
Okay. Nope. So you did the intensive out there and then came back.
Yep. And then I did two more 200-hour programs. And a lot of, you know, weekend intensive trainings and things like that. I do a lot of self-study too. I'm a huge lover of books. I covet and hoard books.
Yeah, you got to keep the mind going. I read all the time, all kinds of different books, including fitness books.
Yeah.
But and watching videos and seeing what else is out there, seeing different people's styles. Because as you said, now with yoga, there's so many different styles out there.
Yeah. Yep. And it's great. I love it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a large menu.
There's a lot, and there's abundance for everybody. There really, in my mind, is no such thing as competition. Everybody has something about them that will ring true to a group of people. And, you know, it's just about coordinating community and, you know, sharing and then reaping, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's why I like these podcasts, these collaborations. It's a great way to get together and exchange ideas.
Yeah.
So, I guess, take us through this. Then you did some yoga certifications, got a lot of information under your belt and experience. And I assume you started your own yoga practice, your own personal practice as well.
Oh, yeah.
And what was the reaction to that initially?
I loved it because I was obviously a lot younger. And so I was very into hardcore Ashtanga and power yoga, and I see also in hindsight this just wave of how your needs change and your time frame changes, your utilization of the practice changes. And I think that's one of the best things about it is, you know, it's not just straight up like weightlifting, which I still lift weights and run all the time, but you know, it really caters to your needs at the time in your life.
It does. It meets you where you need it to meet you, where you're at.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fascinating to speak to instructors about how their own personal practice ebbs and flows throughout their life also. It definitely, I always see the wave concept. They come in waves. Mm-hmm. So, sometimes I'm, as you said, I'm really into power yoga, more Ashtanga. And then sometimes my body wants something a little different. I'll slip into a different style, maybe a deep flexibility training or more of a Hatha basic one or a yin yoga.
Yep. Yeah.
Because it's with the instructors too, it's an ebb and flow. You got to keep yourself inspired and also keep yourself healthy so you can keep doing what you're doing and teaching.
True. Yep. I find myself in writing, creating mode and look, whoa, I haven't even practiced in a month. And then it just makes me even more starving for it. I don't know if you go through that, but
I do. I turn around. I think I'm very self-aware because I'm an instructor, but I realize I'm not. I turn around and think, I have not done this in about 4 or 5 days, or I haven't done this, I haven't done that. And these projects come up, as you said, we get these projects going and they take all of our attention and might be writing about the benefits of yoga all day long, but we're not doing it.
Yeah, I'm glad you admit that, because not a lot of people will admit it.
Oh, I admit it freely. I tell my live classes all the time. And I'll tell them, oh, I'm working on this flow now. Or I was slacking last week. I noticed my posture was lagging. So we're going to be doing this flow today. So, exactly. So I take out my own shortcomings on my classes.
Oh, 100%. And if they were really super aware, they would know exactly what's going on.
And they like it. They're like, hey, he's sharing with us. He's honest. You don't want to walk in and say, I never screw up. I do yoga every single day. You can't touch me.
Yeah.
They'd never come back to the class. But
I wouldn't come back because I would know they were lying.
Absolutely. But yeah, keeping that consistency. I write things down and then I realize, why I'm not doing it. Why am I not doing it? But that's part of the struggle. And as you said, it's so much more rewarding when you get back into it and you realize why the benefits are there, why you're doing it in the first place. So then how did this morph in? You went back to New York. How did you get into working with athletes?
Well, because of my husband, and I was 15, he was being scouted by Major League Baseball. This is always sort of a favorite story about how I got interested, but I found myself at two doubleheaders every weekend watching him play. And at that point, you know, it was the 80s. My hair was royal blue. I had Madonna bracelets up to my elbow. I had, you know, like bazooka earrings and, you know, very 80s. And I suppose, because I think about it now as a mom, that I was, you know, 16, 17, I was going to these games, and I figured if I'm going to spend all this time at these games and I'm going to be of service to the best interests of my husband's success or my future husband's success, my boyfriend at the time, I'm going to take my old folding chair, my own stopwatch, and I'm going to plant myself right in between all the scouts. Who did I think I was? I have no idea.
You knew what you wanted.
I was hysterical in my mind because I had my own stopwatch. He was a catcher. I was timing his throws down to second. I was asking them their time. And they got the hugest kick out of me and they looked forward to it. What does he need to improve? What does this mean? What does that mean? And I just kind of kept picking their brains. And as we moved forward and he got drafted and then got injured, I went to every PT appointment with him. And this is before I was a massage therapist. So this really was sort of planting seeds that I didn't even know. You know, I saw the struggle of an athlete in his journey through surgery and then recovery and trying to get back into it. And then, you know, he became a coach. And I started training more and got into the yoga and we started to think, oh, you know, his teams need to do this too. And I was like, oh, you know, I could definitely do this. And I know what that baseball team needs. You know, I've been watching it for years and not only have I been watching it and learned the game and know the game inside out, but I know what happens if you get injured. So I can backtrack and think about what we can do to not get injured in the first place. And that's sort of the essence of Power Yoga for Sports, is proactive to health, not reactive to injury. And, you know, I pride myself on longevity of my athletes and saving them the angst of getting hurt in the first place, really teaching them to tune into their bodies so they don't get injured and what to do when I'm not there. And that's sort of how it began. And yeah.
So we're looking at a number of years ago. Yoga for athletes was, I'm sure, unheard of back then.
Oh, yeah. It was a struggle every day.
Did people even understand what it was? Now everyone knows the word yoga. They have a kind of general sense of it. But back then, what would people say if you said, hey, I want to bring yoga training to your team?
Right. Well, you know, I was working with the New York Giants, and there's an interesting, I'm sure it's on my YouTube channel, but there was an interesting interview. ABC News did an interview with the Giants that they were doing yoga. And I'll never forget it because they filmed them and they filmed me teaching them, but they wouldn't show me. And it was like, whoa, wait, you know, because it was still just so unheard of. And after they interviewed some of the players and they said, you know, this has, you know, ideas attached to it. What did you think yoga was? And they all said, well, I thought it was easy. In essence, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. I thought it was all hippies and oming and nothing could be further from the truth. And Gwen really knows the game and our needs per position, per player. It's different. And that was sort of, I think, a little turning point, but it was a struggle for, I'm going to say, a decade or more. And around 12 years ago, when I was teaching, it was mandatory for the Giants rookies to do yoga. So I would always work with them once a week. And more, I saw that not only were they coming in having had experience doing yoga, but that because of my online Power Yoga for Sports school, some of them were coming in having done yoga in college via people I trained. So
wow.
It was like, whoa, this is really cool. I think, you know, and you probably do this too. I mean, being the most viewed, you know, guy on YouTube in this field, that when you start to realize, wait, maybe I am doing the right thing. Maybe I do know a thing or two. Maybe, you know,
mm-hmm. it becomes a generational thing. People hear about it from other people, It gets passed around.
Yeah.
And with the videos, you can do that, and the programs and the books. So were the Giants the only NFL football team doing yoga at that time?
I can't 100% say that. I know that back a while ago, there was talk that Baron Baptiste had done some sessions with the Eagles, but I'm going to make a bold statement and say I think I was the most long-term, having been 18 seasons with the New York Giants.
18. Let's say that.
I think I own that, right?
I like that. You were in a newscast about it. You're a pioneer. Now it's, well, how do you view it now with NFL football and yoga? I know I see a lot of articles about it. I do a lot of workouts for it as well. But how is it received now? Is it pretty much mandatory?
It was mandatory with the Giants. I unfortunately left 2 years ago under the McAdoo regime, is all I have to say.
Okay.
They are 6-21 since I left. But what? Did I say that out loud? I don't know.
They have not been doing very well, have they?
But, you know, I think it is definitely becoming more and more commonplace, and some of the big name guys are doing it. And I see more and more pro teams. A lot of my trainees, I'm referring them because I see teams want it, and I'm sort of facilitating their placement. And so it's kind of exciting. I can't be everywhere. So all I want to do is have trainees that I know will be safe and effective and amazing with these athletes and have a great career in life.
And that's a great segue for your Power Yoga for Sports program, because I'm holding it right here, your book, Teaching. I stole it from the store. No, I ordered. I need to get your autograph on it.
I know. I want to send you one. Give that one to somebody and send me your address.
I've already marked this one up a lot, though. I usually get books at the library, but books I know I'm going to write in, underline, and write in the margins, I have to buy these. It's called Teaching Power Yoga for Sports. There's Gwen on the cover. I have so many questions about working one-on-one with these athletes, because you cover all the major sports, and then I guess other sports people wouldn't call major, but they are getting very popular. You're very good at posting these photos, like right here on the cover, you're in a Warrior II position, and then right next to it there's a photo from a soccer match, and one of the players, he's kicking the ball, he's actually almost in a Warrior II position as well.
Right. This is a trademarked aspect of my Power Yoga for Sports program. And so when we talk about, you know, the early days when I was trying to convince, you know, these hardcore, potentially stubborn coaches, high level, Division I level, you know, set in their ways, I had to figure out, you know, how to prove it to them. You know, they say that elevator pitch. Well, I wanted it to be visual and quick, and I started to create these side-by-sides. And, you know, one of my favorites is, you know, a standing one-leg prep pose to Warrior II, to Warrior I, to standing split, Warrior III to standing split, which is exactly a pitcher's motion. Mm-hmm. And I started to send them to, because this is even before social media. I mean, let's be honest, I couldn't post these things. So I started to send them to coaches and the medical staff and training staff. And I think they were little aha moments, and they were always a thing. I saw the change in the coach's face when I would maybe show it in a presentation that would say, when can we start doing this? So that was the inception of that. And I have to think that maybe my art degree had a little bit of push behind that, you know.
It's very clever. So you sent these through the snail mail, through an actual letter?
I did snail mail, and sometimes I did in-person presentations to coaches, you know, just to kind of show them, especially some of the main Division I colleges and high schools around my area. Yeah.
How has it been reaching out to high school football programs or sports programs?
Some of them were great, and I still work with high school kids. I actually love it the most because they're so hungry and they just want to learn. They want to be better and they want to go next level so bad. So, you know, now it's easy, but you know, it was hard.
Well,
it's a man's world. I've been living in a man's world. I am long-term married. I have 3 20-something sons. So I kind of know how to deal with them. And I think that the universe also set me up that way.
I'm sure they love that. I guess it's a personal preference. I don't mind if it's a man or a woman teaching you. It doesn't matter to me, but, because I've experienced that too. Being a guy teaching yoga, a lot of people assume I'm going to be a girl walking through the door. And I'm like, no, I'm a guy teaching yoga. But as long as you do it with passion and you have a good time with it and you care about your students, I don't think anybody really, really cares.
Yep. Definitely. And then they see how I handle them. And I've always handled my athletes, no matter what age, like they were my kids. Even the New York Giants. So I'm like, stop it or I'm telling your mother. Or go sit over there. And they just respond. They respond innately. It's really hilarious. And when I started, Sean, they were my contemporaries when I started with the Giants and other teams. And now they're as old as me.
Now they're the same age as your boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But isn't that great that you can be doing this for so long?
But it's like, I look at them and I go, stop it. I could have birthed you. Now stop.
Do many of them stay in touch with you after they leave the professional football world?
Yeah, and I love that. And at any given moment, especially that 2007 Super Bowl team, 2011 Super Bowl team, I could text them, especially my book was coming out. If you notice, there's a lot of quotes in there from them that they're just so supportive and always have been on my journey. And it really has made a difference because if they can speak up for me, everyone's going to, you know, listen.
Well, if you can put somebody's name behind it, a well-known sports figure, put their name saying you have to do this, that means more than almost anything.
Yeah. Yep. They don't really care about me. It's like, wait, well, who did it? You know, who should I trust? Oh, I know him. I'll trust him. So yeah, I've been fortunate that way.
Do you change or adapt your training depending on the sport?
Absolutely. And that's another cornerstone of Power Yoga for Sports. It's not only I change my programs for many reasons. It could be per sport, per position, where they are in their training schedule. You know, is it preseason, postseason, pregame, postgame? So I have to be on top of it. I have to be able to change things on the fly. If I go in there and there's 90% hamstrings and I was thinking, you know, well, we were going to do shoulders, so centric routine. So I am constantly asking questions, constantly in touch with the coaches and trainers, with the needs and what's going on, for sure. That's what really makes you effective with athletes. You can just teach anything. Any yoga teacher will be wonderful, but to boil it down and make the best use of the athlete's time, I need to be super specific to their needs.
And it's like you're a personal trainer for them.
Yeah.
In a way, not giving them blanket class. We're going to do the same flow every single time. So for football, say you had a quarterback and a linebacker, what would be the difference initially training them?
You know, the difference being, you know, whereas the quarterback definitely, you know, throws and uses the whole body, you know, you said a linebacker, you know, I would be very hip, leg, making sure that we're strengthening and stretching and increasing the power and the push off in his legs. And perhaps the quarterback, we'd work rotationally in the spine. We'd work in opening up chest, shoulder, anterior deltoid, even bicep, neck, and a little bit more of the mental game.
Oh, the mental game. There, you have a whole chapter in your book on visualization and mindfulness.
Yeah.
Take us through quickly what mindfulness. in sports. Well,
before I do that, I mean, the six facets of power yoga for sports are balance, strength, flexibility, mental toughness, focus, and breath. So it's not just about flexibility, but getting to that mental game. And this too, it seems like this is another trend. Like when we both started yoga, it was not very, you know, common in the sports world. So now this last 6 years, it's been mindfulness in the sports world that wasn't very commonplace unless you're Phil Jackson, but now is becoming, you know, needed. Absolutely 100% needed. So, you know, I find that, well, this is the question I say to them all the time. If, you know, I'll pose to the team, how much of of your game do you think is mental? 9 times out of 10, they'll say 80 to 90%. There'll always be one little bugger in that class that goes 20%. You know? And I go, okay, I'll always take the lowest number. I'll go, okay. So if you think 20% of your game is mental, how much of your training outside the field, off the field, is mental? And 100% of the time, they'll say zero. And I said, you're leaving yourself at a huge disadvantage, because as you evolve in your game and get better and better and higher and more elite, you will come up against the same guy with this, or woman, with the same experience, with the same body type, with the same BMI and strength and everything. And if he or she is doing mental training and you're not, they are going to win every time. And I think you could see, if we use, well, we could use two examples. One would be a pitcher. I'm sure you and your listeners have all seen a major league pitcher just louse it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the head goes down. They're kicking the dirt. They're getting aggro. And what happens? The batter, the opposite team, knows they got him. And it's pretty much over. I think we could also see that a little bit with Odell Beckham Jr. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, once you lose that mental edge, that clarity and that focus, you're done. I don't care if you can jump 16 feet, leap across the field, kick a 100-yard field goal. If you're mentally not there that day, it's
over. Yeah, the physical skills don't even matter.
They don't even matter. So you can't even tap into them at that point. So those are the words that really draw them in. And, you know, the past has been all about meditation. And frankly, I tried to meditate for 20 years. And to be a mom of three and a business owner and getting it done and hustling, I could never quiet my mind. It was completely frustrating. So mindfulness has been very revolutionary for me and my athletes, and teaching them some eyes open practice, some eyes closed practice, that teaches them what to do with that mind chatter and where to place their thoughts so that they can be present.
Have you had some players come in that were all over the place, no focus, no mindfulness?
Oh.
And you work with them with the yoga, with the meditation, the breath, and mm-hmm. there's some that you notice an immediate improvement when you watch them play the next Sunday, whenever they play.
100%. 100%. And I've even gotten emails about, you know, I did this, and a lot of magical things with visualization, and they'll write me and go, yeah, it worked. Or one example, I had an NFL player that had pregame anxiety and threw up before every game, and we did some techniques and that ceased to exist anymore. So that was super satisfying for me, and obviously, you know, a revolutionary for him as well.
And you said that sometimes they come from college, they have already been doing mindfulness, they have been doing yoga training. Is it as prevalent in college, have you seen, as it is in the pros?
A little bit more with the mindfulness now, a lot more with yoga practice itself.
Okay, as it gets more and more accepted.
Yeah.
So you have hundreds, you might have thousands of athletes out there that have trained with you, all different sports. Do you watch them? Do you schedule times to watch them play if they're still playing actively in a sport?
Yeah, that's, if I'm working with them in particular, that's actually part of my training for people too, is they are made to put in hours watching, observing the game and looking at it as a teacher, not a fan. And I had a Major League Baseball player that I would watch, and I could tell when he was off, and I would go text him, blah, 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 it's happening. This is happening. And you know, I'd probably be at his house within 24 hours.
Wow. So you would go over there and actually work with him.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It was kind of funny. I would even take pictures off the TV to show them and prove my point.
Wow. That's so effective. I mean, these professional players have many different kinds of trainers, but it sounds like you had almost very unlimited access to them.
To some of them, you know, I'm super, super fiercely loyal and protective. And I think that that is so important. And they see that. So they feel very safe. And oftentimes they'll tell me some tweaks and things that are happening perhaps before the trainer to see if we can sideline it, you know, and not maybe mark them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Power Yoga for Sports, what's the future of your program? You're certifying teachers around the country, around the world?
Yeah, I have 18 countries and 28 states trainees in right now. Obviously, I'd love to have all countries and all states. That's always a goal. I'm cultivating these online training kits. I just launched 14 of them. It took me about 2 years to put together, and they're chock full of videos, sport-specific videos and information, so that people that don't have access to me can, you know, get it done on their own. I am really, I think this year, trying to up my online game. I'm going to devote the year to that, especially because this book is done and this has been 2 years of writing. So yeah, that's going to be my year. And I've made an elite master training program and elite program so that I can help people on the business end of it and help cultivate their careers.
Okay. So these teachers that are being certified, do they go right into mainly working with athletes, or can they teach anywhere?
You know, some of them come to me and they already say, you know, I've been working with my kids' teams, or this is my dream job. And once they're done, they have to, full disclosure, they have to come into, because it's an online program, they have to come into my program having been a PE teacher, coach, trainer, 200-hour certified already, so I know that they have a sound background in anatomy. It would be super hard for me to do an online anatomy course with them. Mm-hmm. And then we can tack this on. And I've seen many, one of the, used to be only yoga teachers came to my program, but the newest draw has been PE teachers, and that's really kind of cool. They're adding it to their docket, and coaches, as PE teachers and coaches, they're able to do that without bringing outside people in. So it's just really adding to their resumes.
Yeah, adding to their weaponry, actually. Yeah. Your husband coaches. Does he teach yoga too?
Yes,
since he's married to the Power Yoga for Sports guru?
Yeah, he does. It's great. He teaches. He's at a private school in Rye, New York, and he teaches his athletes, and he has he teaches it in his PE program.
Okay, great reaction to that?
Yeah, they love it.
I used to teach yoga down at the Montessori school when I lived in Florida. I did that a couple years, and they loved it.
Yeah.
It was ages 4 through about 13. Each age group was a little bit different, but they all really enjoyed it. It was a great challenge for me too, working with kids. I'd never done that before. But the names of the poses and the sequences, they had such a good time with them. Yeah. The names are a lot of fun, and they get to do it with their friends. And I think their favorite part was the shavasana at the end, the meditation. They would zonk out, or they would be there with a big smile on their face.
Yeah. They usually ask me, and I will spread essential oil. So either cinnamon or something that's kind of like happy, and they call it story time, 'cause I usually read from some kind of inspirational story or mind gym or something that, you know, is very relevant to them, and they love it. They go, when is story time? When is story time?
Yeah, I used to do
No, these kids are so bogged down. They need that time.
I would say stressed out kids grow up to be stressed out adults, and they would all go tell their parents that. I knew a lot of their parents. I'm like, yeah, she is pretty stressed out all the time. They come in their big SUV to pick up their kid, and they'd be rushing in really fast. And yeah, my mom needs yoga. So
yeah, isn't that great when they do that?
It is. And I say, well, be ambassadors, show them this pose, show them child's pose, show them downward facing dog. and yeah. and do it together as a family. We would send homework home with them to practice. I said, get your family, get your parents together to do it. And start them young with the, be able to use the breath effectively and to focus and to release when you need to. Because it sounds nice, but most people, including myself and probably you a lot of the time, I cannot do that sometimes. I still have a hard time. And in theory, these things make perfect sense, but I can't put them into practice sometimes.
And you know, it is as simple. The first thing I teach with mindfulness is the diaphragmatic breathing, breathing in and out through your nose, deep down into your belly, because it literally turns off the fight or flight response and allows the part of your brain, prefrontal cortex, to remain in the present so you can access what you're actually supposed to be doing and thinking. And it's as simple as that.
When you said that, I took three deep breaths.
I heard
Did you hear it?
Yes.
And I do that a lot now. If I start getting, you know, worry creeps in, some confusion, I start taking deep breaths. My wife the other night, she was reading in bed and I got out of the shower and I was getting ready for bed, brushing my teeth. And she goes, well, I can't sleep with all that breathing in there. she was joking, but I was in doing these breaths and I was reading a book and flossing in tree pose. The perfect, that should be the cover of my next book. Well, all that breathing in there, what's going on? Keeping up the dog and pulling the belly button in. But it's so true. It's this beautiful tool that we have access to 24/7. Doing this podcast, we were working for a while, a number of weeks or months, trying to set up a time, you and I, Gwen. And I'm not really a morning person. So to get ready for this podcast this morning, I was walking around. I went for a little walk. I was taking deep breaths. I actually saw my neighbor outside. So I was chatting with him. He's like, I got to get my brain going. I usually don't do much at this time of day.
Sorry about that. I appreciate it.
But it's good. I think the first 15 minutes of the podcast, I was still taking those breaths. Like, oh, she's wide awake. And I'm like staring at the Christmas tree here, wondering where that ornament came from. But now I take some deep breaths and it's amazing how focused I get. The mindfulness, the visual factor, which is
that. And full disclosure, I had 20 ounces of coffee every morning. I am a coffee drinking yogi and I am proud.
Hey, I'm holding in both my hands right now. My right hand, I finished my coffee. My left hand is holding a cup with green tea. There you go. Love, and I have water. I have a whole weird setup here.
Well, you sent me a picture of your desk.
Oh,
you had just completed a podcast and I laughed to myself because it was a beautiful, beautiful view. And the looks like a big round table just covered with papers. And I go, well, that looks familiar.
I've learned so much doing my podcast, especially having people on as guests, how I operate. I always say, if you could see my notes here, it says Gwen Lawrence podcast on the top. And I do an outline. The outline looks pretty good. And then I start writing in the margins. Then I start writing in any available space. Like I wrote imagery, breath. I write all these things. And then I have another little notebook here that I'm actively taking notes as you're talking. I could show these to someone else. They would have no idea what it is. But to me, I can actually make sense of it.
Yeah, I hear
you. Learn how you work in these new situations.
Yeah, I'm a post-it princess.
It's good. Well, you're all over the place. How often do you travel to teach?
Every day. I've tried. It's been the past maybe 5 months where I pack and travel 4 days a week now. And I'm infinitely happier. And then 2 days a week come January, we'll be working at home and filming. And I'm like very much looking forward to that.
So when you're traveling, is this in the States or is it international?
Yeah, it's more and more in the States. I did a lot of professional development. I had a lot of professional development goals. And as I was achieving them and traveling, every time they came up, I was completely bummed out and annoyed and I didn't want to do it and I didn't want to travel. And once I'm there, I love it and I have fun, but I don't want to do that anymore. I mean, frankly, I want to flood my channels and be a hermit.
So you're kind of going in the reverse. Are these, when you're traveling, are you doing teacher trainings mainly?
No, mostly I'm training groups, teams, and even one-on-one. So I could do 30. I typically do 30,000 miles a month traveling.
How have we not run into each other in an airport? I mean, you and I would probably set up a camera and do a whole power yoga workout right in the terminal.
I see. I wouldn't do that. I don't know why. I film everything I teach, but I always see some of my colleagues, you know, in the airports, and I'm like, I never think of that. You know, I actually feel like the airport, I can finally be still.
And, mm-hmm.
So I don't even think of it. I got to think of it.
No, that's a good point. I see friends doing that too, and I think, oh, how annoying. If someone's walking along and, hey, let me tell you how to stay in shape while you're flying, and they're right in the middle of everybody. People are stepping over them while they're in a plank position. And I think that's not practical. Go way yeah. off in the corner. I was at O'Hare yeah. Airport a couple of years ago, and they actually have a yoga room there.
I heard, and that one of my friends started that, I think.
So. Okay. Well, tell them thank you, but I was excited. I'm like, oh, I'll go in here and do a little filming. And there were about three airport employees just lying on the floor in there on their phones. So
oh,
that
on.
Was their yoga. So I think I took a picture and said, it's occupied. I'll go do some yoga on the stairs.
Yeah, agreed. And you could visualize it that day.
But that's true.
I think 90% of the times I'm in an airport, and this just could be me, I see mice running around. So the last thing I want to do is get down and start doing yoga.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about, because we got power yoga for sports. These topics on these podcasts too, like I could talk to you about this for another 2 or 3 hours. You and I could just dish.
We could do part two.
Yeah, we'll probably do a part two. I've had podcasts like, you know, we got to, as they say, unpack this. We have to do more with this because I love digging in. And now that the coffee's kicked in, I'm wired.
Cool.
You do a lot of work with military veterans for PTSD.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And how did that come about?
Well, my dear friend Bob Woodruff, who are you aware of who that is? He used to be ABC News.
Yes.
He still is.
Yes, I do know
but
him.
He used to be major, and he got hit with an IED on location and was nearly killed. He and his wife were my clients prior to that. And after that, there was a key moment where he was in his rehab, and I mean, the injuries were just astounding. And they caught him doing a tree pose, and Lee, his wife, emailed me and said, thank God for Gwenny and the yoga. He was doing tree pose and it hit me in the heart like nothing else hit me in the heart before. And I actually went through a little period of anger and a little hatred towards my athletes and thought, this world is so backward that they worship and devote all their time and energy and money to these athletes. And if it wasn't for our veterans who are babies now, when I grew up, they were sort of scary older men, you mm-hmm. know, that were tucked away.
They're 18 years old now.
Yeah. So they're these young guys and girls. And if they weren't, there would be no such thing as these athletes. And I have a list, Sean, when I'm president, what I'm going to do.
Uh-huh. Yoga in the Oval Office for the veterans.
One of them is that before any pro contract, they have to serve a year. And I think just get gratitude and understand what else is out there. And that was the turning point with me, with Bob. And I reached out and I work with their foundation. I do a lot of I'm sure you have a lot of affiliate codes with companies. Anytime I have an affiliate code with a company, my money goes to not me. It goes to the Bob Woodruff Foundation, mm-hmm. and I try to work with as many as I can. I worked with a producer. He was most recently the executive producers for The Blacklist, and he is an ex-Marine, one of the most amazing people, and we did a lot of heart opening, anxiety, PTSD, brain, breath, work. And I don't know who got more out of it. I don't know who it was a better gift for.
So when you're working through the foundation, are you working one-on-one with veterans or are you doing classes? How does that work?
That hasn't been able to be in my wheelhouse regularly, but that is certainly something on my goal list to be able to dedicate and devote. I'm honestly not independently wealthy, so it's been really hard to make and carve out time for that. So what I hope to do in the future is to get corporate sponsorship so that I can devote a lot more time to them and they don't have to pay, because they should never
No,
have to
that's
pay.
Wonderful. I've when I go home to Wisconsin, most of the time I do go to Fort McCoy. It's an Army installation, and I do classes there. And that's awesome. I love doing that. That fort's been, it's about 20 minutes from where I grew up, where I spent about 18 years. I'd never really been over there. And it's really a pleasure to go over there. I have a lot of friends there now. And we always do something a little different when I'm there, but they really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And these are men and women. They serve all over. They've a lot of them have been in Iraq and Afghanistan. A lot of them have been in combat. So it's really good to run them through these poses and these flows and to talk to them. And I'm going home next week again. I might set up another class there because I love doing that. I know my dad was a veteran also. He was in the 50s, he served over in Germany. He was in Elvis's division. That's what I always talk about. They missed each other. My dad came back to the States and Elvis went over there. And oh, God bless my dad. He used to do yoga with me down in Florida. He would do Pilates with me. He really loved Pilates.
Cool.
And we lost him last year, and I really wanted to take him to Fort McCoy. He was going to come, but then he was going down. He got sick. That would really been a blessing to take him over.
I bet he's with you.
Oh, he is.
Talk to him when you go.
I talk to my dad all the time. I can imitate my dad's voice pretty much to a T. I just saw my sister a couple days ago. She lives about an hour and a half from me in Colorado. And of course, we were talking about dad, and I was imitating his voice a bit, but it made her a little sad, so I didn't do it. But I'm very proud of him for doing that for his service. So
yes, absolutely.
So I wish the best for you also with getting more and more involved with the veterans. I've been thinking of ways that I can do that too. I was looking at offering.
So maybe I'll include you on my plans. I have a very grand master plan that we're cooking for this year.
I think you and I think very bold. Very big, because we're so passionate and proud
this
of what we offer.
This is a biggie, but I know I can do it. So we will definitely.
If you need help, you let me know, because I think with our resources pulled together, we could do very well. And I've thought about doing videos for veterans or active military, but I wasn't sure how to do them.
It is a tricky thing.
As you said,
this is part of the big vision. So hang on.
Okay.
Hang on.
We'll brainstorm.
And if there are any yoga teachers listening, I'm not sure the grasp of who listens, but I'd love to give them just a visual of what two things that happened when I taught the Bob Woodruff Foundation is there was this happens every year. They come in a little guarded, never having done yoga, and obviously with great disabilities. And as they get to know me and I lighten them up and we change the air and the vibe in the room, they start stripping down their prosthetics, and it's amazing to me, and I feel so honored and privileged that they feel comfortable to do that. And these are 20-year-old kids, no arms, no legs. One in particular, this young man came in and he was burnt 90% of his body, severely scarred. And at the end, being a massage therapist, sometimes I'll go up to someone and I'll work on their neck or their occiput or just a little gentle on their face. And he started to cry. And I'm going to cry telling you about it. And he came up to me after and he goes, "You don't know how much better I feel. No one ever touches me." And if anybody's listening and can do one thing like that, you don't know what an impact you would have. You really don't.
Well, what a gift you have that you can serve him like that, that you can look him right in the eyes and work with him directly.
It was amazing moments for sure.
Well, that's nice. I definitely, let's talk more about that, because I would love to be involved with any program that would help the veterans.
Okay, you remind me, I'll send you the outline.
Okay.
And I'll show you the to-do list that we're working on.
Okay, the to-do list grows all the time.
We're scoping a big corporate sponsor so that, again, we can serve our families and still, have a salary, but give time and not one veteran or veterans' families, because we also have to remember their families are coping with things that are unspeakable and are living in situations – living their lives, and then someone comes back and they don't even know how to cope with them. So there's so much to be done with them as well. And they should never have to pay forever. And we're building toolboxes and just this whole really cool thing I'd love to tell you about.
Okay, great. Well, we can definitely put that information in the description for this podcast also.
Cool.
When we have it. Good. My last podcast I had, his name is Geraint. He's a friend of mine. He's an author. He's also a British military veteran. And we...
Wow.
I didn't know where the conversation was going to go because we had never spoken, but he's a real fun guy. We have the most interesting texts back and forth and messages, but he spoke about his two tours in Iraq and his tour in Afghanistan. It's very interesting. I just let him talk. And he's a very successful writer now too. I've read a couple of his books. He's very good. He's co-written books with James Patterson. And
wow.
I think a lot of people have, but he had two books out last week, and I'm very proud of him. I'd love to have him back on again. I just want to talk a whole segment on how he writes, but we did talk a lot. He's from Wales, how he would be in a combat zone for many, many months and then come back home and trying to cope with that and then go back. He loved to serve, though. He wanted to go back. He went back to Iraq, and he went back to Afghanistan, or he did a whole tour in Afghanistan.
They've seen things they can't unsee, and then they're supposed to go back to their families and be that person they were before. And it's not even close to a possibility.
No, he had spoken about he might have become a police officer there, but then there was an opportunity to go back and serve. And he really wanted to do that. So really, really neat guy. So everyone check out that podcast. It's a two-parter. We spoke for like an hour and a half, like you and I are. All right. Well, at the end of these podcasts, Gwen, I have a list, and I won't ask you all of them. I have a list of about 25 fun questions. I always like to pull.
Okay.
I always like to pull a few out. It's a good way to cleanse the palate after the discussion.
Okay, but you know we have a safe word if I don't want to answer.
Yeah, we do. We spoke about that before the podcast. The safe word. I don't even know if I was awake when we spoke back then. But the coffee. And I'm staring at about 10 Santas on my Christmas tree. Okay, and you could answer these as in depth as you wish.
Okay.
What's your favorite workout song?
Kid Rock, Bow with the Bow to Bang the Bang Diddy.
I love that song. And at first, when that song comes on, you don't hear it. You think it's you think that you lost the signal. Like, oh crap!
Yes!
Then you pull your phone
you
out.
Know the song!
And then there it is. Bow to the Bow. Oh, that reminds me of working in Daytona Beach for some reason. I used to listen to that, and I would go insane doing pull-ups. I think when that song would come on.
Huge Kid Rock fan. I saw him. I like.
Oh, that's going to be stuck in my head. That should be my theme song for the podcast.
Yes, please. I'm begging it to be my son's a Division I pitcher, and he's a senior, and they always pick a walk-up song. I'm like, please, please, Bow with the Bow.
See, next time we have you on, I want to talk about your sons, too, about what they're doing in sports, because they have the pro baseball player and the top power yoga for sports person in the country.
And what we produced. Great kids.
Yeah, good. That's very good. Yeah. Okay. I'm looking at all these questions. There's so many. What's your favorite place in the world?
Sedona, Arizona. And I'll be going again very soon this month or January. It's magical. It's gorgeous. The hiking, it has these vortexes. Have you ever been?
No.
These power vortexes of energy that have long history to them, and they profoundly affected me. Nearly 3 years ago, my husband was recovering from cancer, and we went for the first time, and we sat in these vortexes, and crazy things happened to me, and I'm forever in love with that place.
Okay. Are you going there to teach?
No.
Vacation?
I did. I was one of the headliners for the Sedona Yoga Festival 1 or 2 years ago, but yeah, we're just going to go and chill.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is your desert island book besides your book and my book?
good point. You know, I have, just like you, a very big library of folded pages and marks and post-its and bookmarks. But when I go away, I do just silly beach reads on a Kindle, and there's really no just quick beach reads. I mean, there's really no one book I could say. Although my favorite book is The Untethered Soul.
Okay. Yeah. I think a beach read for me was Jackie Collins. I read.
Yeah, stuff like that.
That was
you know?
When I was doing theater. I'm like, these are interesting. that or John Grisham or
exactly.
Nelson DeMille. You want one more?
Sure.
Oh, there's so many on here. Wait, let me. Well, since this is the season, what is your favorite Christmas or / holiday film?
Elf.
Elf. I figured you're going to say Elf. I think that's the most popular movie right now is Elf.
Oh, I just love that movie.
It's the newest classic, I think. Came out in 2004, and it definitely, when I first saw it, I thought that's a classic right there.
It's so innocent and real, and I love it so
and
much.
You're a New York girl, right?
Yeah.
And they're filmed all around New York, Central Park, Fifth Avenue, on Central Park West. And I was just in New York. Well, it was a couple months ago. I didn't know you lived there.
I'm a little mad at you.
I didn't know. Whenever I go somewhere, I get an email like that from somebody who I know. Say, hey, why don't you look me up? I didn't know you lived there.
Yeah. Because that's so funny. Like, you just assume people know. I don't know why I would even assume that. And I was like, what the heck? You didn't even tell you were just here? Oh, my God.
I know we could have filmed in Central Park. I did a little series. My best friend, he just wanted to film. He didn't want to be on the camera. He goes, I don't want people to recognize me. I'm like, why? So, but I
what is he on the
witness protection?
Yeah, witness
protection. He's like Henry Hill in Goodfellas. He's like, I don't want to be on. And this is a guy I used to do theater with. I met him doing theater. He's like, I don't want to be on the camera. That's how he talks too. And I said, fine. But I wanted him to do some fun things. Like, people get bored of seeing me all the time. Get on the camera, do something. But it was great to film in Central Park. I did that.
You were there at a perfect time before it got really
cold. It was really nice. It was about 70 degrees. And
yeah, that was not normal.
No. And you can film right in the middle of people there. They don't even really notice.
As long as you have your phone. Otherwise, you can get a ticket if you have a big camera.
Oh, you have a permit probably if you
have
like a crew. Now, I just had Peter holding my GoPro.
Yeah.
That was it. Okay, Gwen. Well, yeah, we should plan a part two. I might split this into two parts. We'll see what I do with it. But if people want to find out more about you, Gwen Lawrence, where can they go?
GwenLawrence.com is my website. At Gwen Lawrence on Instagram. I would love it. And Gwen Lawrence Yoga on YouTube.
Okay, I'll put those in the description below so they can go check that out. And thanks so much for chatting with me today. It's one of those really neat friendships where you have a great friendship and you know what the other person's doing, but you've never spoken to them.
Yes, agreed. So I'm very happy about this.
Do you ever do any workshops or teaching in the Denver area?
I used to do a lot of work in Denver with Guyam, so I went out a lot, and I haven't been since, but I love the area, so dying to go back.
Okay, if you do come out, you look me up, we'll do some filming out in the mountains. And one last thing, I'm pointing at one of them. At the library, I got two of your Guyam DVDs. I typed in your name, and you have about seven of them, right, with Guyam?
Well, what did you get? Let me hear.
Oh, it's over across the room.
Fit Body Yoga is my main one with Guyam. And then the Power Yoga for Sports one are self-produced. And then Guyam has stuff that's on Guyam TV. I'm not sure if they're in DVD form, but who knows?
Okay, wait. I don't want to lose the signal. I'm walking across the room. This is Gwen Lawrence's Yoga for Fitness.
Yeah, Yoga for Fitness, Fit Body Yoga. They're actually the same video. They just repackaged again. And that was really fun because I filmed in LA, but we did the initial stuff in Boulder, and I had a hard time talking and doing my yoga. I had a train for it.
Oh, you come up here. Boulder's lower than
I was having a seizure.
I live even higher than that. It's tough. It really gets your red blood cells going really quickly.
I couldn't talk and do my own yoga, and no one really told me. I didn't know what was happening. I thought I was having a heart attack, and then I realized. So
it's a struggle that a lot of people know about. When I go down, I say going down the hill, even to Denver, especially when I go to Wisconsin, where you're almost at sea level, it is amazing. It is a drug. When you take those deep breaths that we were doing earlier, you get about 30% more oxygen in your system.
It was a very big learning curve for me.
And they don't tell you that. My sister lives even higher. They're at 8,400 feet. We're at 8,000 feet. So it will get you in very good shape, but it will, your lungs really have to work. But I know a lot of athletes come up here to train, or they wear those masks that actually limits their oxygen uptake.
Yep. Some of my Giants would do that before they would go out to Denver, to Boulder and to Denver.
Oh, when they would play.
The Mile High.
Mile High. I always think about that.
They would train home first with that mask on the treadmill so they would be prepared and have the edge, you know.
That is tough. And your throat gets sore for like a week because of the heavy breathing. If you ever come up here, we'll film and you can experience it firsthand again. I'll just let you talk.
I'll be on the ground.
Oh, Sean, this is great. Having a great time.
I'll do the yin poses. No, you do the up poses. I'll do the yin.
Gwen's going to sit over there for a while. Let me do a monologue. Well, this has been fantastic, Gwen. Thank you for coming on it's now called the Sean Vieg Podcast. It was Fitness Unleashed with Sean. I changed it. Sean Vieg Podcast. Very straightforward.
I like that better.
Yeah. You put your name in it and people can search and find it. And I like these things. We talk about this. It's all organic when these new things come along. So thank you everybody for listening. Sean Vieg Podcast. If you've been enjoying it, please give it a good rating, leave a comment, leave your feedback, and always share it with your friends and family. Don't keep it a secret. If you want to learn more about me, you can always check out SeanVeegFitness.com. I'll put that in the description below as well, where you can download my free fitness app, browse my library of books, and subscribe to my YouTube channel. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll come at you next time.